Emmanuel F. States.
And when and where were you born?
I was born in Redstone, Montana, on February 22nd, 1921.
Okay, what was your family life like before the war? Were your family farmers?
They were farmers, ranchers. And that's what I did, helped on the farm and the ranch.
Do you attend school?
Yeah, I graduated from Redstone High School in 1938.
Okay. How many college?
Well, when I was in the Air Force, I went to college for about 4 months. That's the only college I've had.
So no college before?
No.
After the war? By the time the war began, you joined the Army, were you married or were you?
No, I was single.
Okay, does your family have any real political leanings before the war?
No, I guess they were Republican, more or less.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You don't know whether they voted for President Roosevelt or anything like that. I guess he was a Democrat.
Yeah. He was a Democrat, and I don't know the first time he ran if they did or not.
Mm-hmm. What was the greatest daily concern of your family prior to the war? Was it just
making a living farming? Now.
Yeah. My grandfather served in the Navy during the war, was on a farm in Indiana. That's where his folks were.
Yeah.
Is there anyone in your family or community who's been a veteran of the First World War or any other?
Oh yes, there's people from the First World War that were veterans in our community.
And did this have any effect on the perception of the military?
No, I don't think so. They all seemed to be proud that they'd been in the military.
Uh-huh. Was your father?
No, he wasn't in the First World War. I think he was about to get drafted and then the war ended before he was married and had kids, so.
Right. Prior to the American involvement in the war, do you have any real knowledge? I mean, did you get the newspaper?
Well, sure. We got the daily newspaper. And, you know, it started even when I was in high school.
Right.
Started. So it
was 1939, I believe.
Yeah. Well, there was
a lot of
fighting going on. Yeah. You know, Hitler was. Mm-hmm. Taking over things, so yeah, I knew what was going on.
And what was your opinion of what was?
I figured that eventually the United States would get into war, and you know, and if you had to go, you had to go. Well, that's about it.
Mm-hmm. I was looking on a map recently, and I noticed Redstone is real close to not only North Dakota and northern Montana, but to Canada.
Did you
know anyone out there who, because they went to war right when England did?
Yeah.
Do you have any interaction with the folks up there? Or?
Not really, because we didn't know that many Canadians, you know. They would come down to shop in Bunnywood. They didn't come around Redstone that much.
Okay.
So I don't know what they felt, really.
That was just sort of a side question. Did any particular ethnicity or heritage that your family may have affect your perceptions of the combatants?
No. Some German blood, but that didn't have any effect on, you know, it's been too long ago when their ancestors came. It didn't really make that much difference.
Where were you and sort of what were you doing when you found out Pearl Harbor had been bombed?
Oh, we'd been church and come home from church and we were on the radio. It was on a Sunday, and so well, I remember the weather was really nice at that time up where we lived. I think it was in the 50s even, so.
Wow. Not usual for December.
Yeah, it was. It was. My sister happened to be home at that time. So you know, it came over the radio.
Oh, you'd gotten home from church?
Yeah, it was after, we had earlier church.
Right.
I think it was kind of between church and dinner time there, on the radio.
What was sort of your initial reaction?
Well, I don't know if there was all that much. It was a surprise. I guess there was probably more reaction afterwards when you realized that the United States had declared war then. And you figured you were going to get called sometime.
And this is kind of specific. I mean, do you remember that Congressman Rankin was the member of the...
She voted against the war.
Right.
Jeanette Rankin, yeah. I remember.
Was that a matter that was discussed, or...?
No, I don't know. I've never heard any much discussion about that.
Okay, I will get to some more specifics here. So when the time finally came that you joined the military, were you drafted or?
No, at that time, of course, everybody had a draft number. And in summer, my number came up, and at that time you could get a harvest deferment. So I got a harvest deferment.
Summer of 1942, or?
That was in 1942, yeah.
Okay.
And so I got deferred, and then I decided that I wanted to be in the Air Corps, so I decided to enlist in the cadet program. And at that time, if you'd had 2 years of college, you could become a cadet, or you could, if you didn't have 2 years of college, you could take a intelligence test and a physical, and if you passed those, then you would become a cadet.
Right, and this would qualify you to become an officer?
You had three choices there. You would become a pilot or a bombardier or a navigator.
Right.
And at that time, if you flunked out on all those, then you could go to officer's candidate school. But that kind of petered out after they got, there were more and more people were enlisting in the Air Corps.
Right.
So it was a cadet program, yeah.
So what was your expectation upon entry into the cadet program?
Well, that's what I hoped to be, a pilot or a bombardier or a navigator. Hopefully more bombardier than anything else. More interested in.
Why did you choose the Air Corps and in particular your interest in bombardier?
I think, of course, being a farm boy, I never flew in my life, so I didn't know all that much about flying. But I don't know, I just figured that the Air Corps is better than walking.
Right.
And I guess that was some of it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it was something different to be doing, that I've never done before. So, and after You know, you talk to people who have been through things. I thought, well, maybe I could make a better volunteer than a pilot. Or, so,
you mentioned a sister. Did you have any brothers?
No. I have two sisters. They're both older than mine.
Okay, so you didn't. But any cousins or anything who are also in the Air Force? Was that an issue?
No, I had some friends that were in the Air Corps. You know, they
joined together, or?
No, well, I had a friend that joined the same time I did, yeah. And we went to basic training together, and that was the last I saw him.
Okay. And what was your family's reaction when you joined?
Well, you know, your family knew you had to go, so you just made the best of it. You know, I imagine they didn't really want me, you know, but it's just something that you did.
Where was, when you got shipped off to basic, where did you do your...
Where did I go?
Yeah.
Shepherd Field, Texas. That was the basic training there.
Where in Texas is that? And if you don't know, that's fine.
I can't remember. They're there in town. I never did get to go to town while I was there. You know, it was basic training, and they had a lot of cadets there, and a lot of sickness. And you got up at 4 o'clock, and you sometimes didn't get to bed till about 11. It got hot in the daytime, and colder than dickens at night. You put all the stuff you had on you at night. And,
this your first extended period away from home?
Well, I was in the Civilian Conservation Corps in 38 and 39 for 6 months, and that was at Glacier Park, cutting down trees and stuff, so...
Glacier, Montana?
Yeah.
So you've been away from home?
Yeah, and you see, it was run by the military, so I had had a little... learning how to make your beds and inspections and all that stuff.
Right, so that wasn't as big an adjustment as it was for some of them?
No, it wasn't. And since I'd been away from home that much, why, you know, it wasn't a big deal.
Did they let you write letters from basic training?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you see, in those days, you didn't have to pay postage. All you had to do was write free up in the corner of your envelope. And then you had your address in the corner.
Right.
And when I got overseas, of course, then the officers had to inspect the letters, and they might cut out pieces that they thought was shouldn't be told. And,
right.
I don't know.
Talk a little bit more about what you remember about basic training and what you sort of liked and what you sort of disliked.
Well, I didn't like getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I went to chow about 5, and we had retreat every night out on the parade ground. You had to put on your dress up, you know, and I had sergeants performing up and down the lines. You had to stand at attention, and it was pretty hot, and some people just passed out. That wasn't all that much fun. But,
the heat would be different than it is in Montana.
Well, just being so still, you know, you couldn't move. And sometimes I didn't have to go because they took you by how tall you was. Well, I was shorter, so... They got everybody, by the time they got to my size, they had enough, which I didn't mind missing. But yeah, and I don't know, there was a lot of colds and coughs and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But there was some time, you know, they went on pretty long hikes, and that wasn't so bad. You know, I was in pretty good shape, so didn't bother me too much. But everything was kind of new. We did a lot of drilling.
Right.
And that wasn't so bad either.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you had some experience with this in the conservation program. What was it like meeting people from presumably all around the country?
Well, I had no problem with it. And of course, the current people at that time were segregated, so we didn't have much to do with them.
Well, but even...
But there was people from all over the United States, you know, different. And of course, you know, all the Southerners talk different, and many of the Northerners from New England talk different. And, but, you know, you got used to them, and I had no problem with that at all.
Sort of as you left basic training, obviously in the Air Corps, moved on to advanced training.
Well, at that time, see, they had so many people that the schools couldn't handle them all, so they sent you to college. It was a college, what they called a college training detachment.
Right.
We went to I went to a college in northwestern Oklahoma, a teacher's college. There was 400 of us went. 398 went on the train, and a couple of guys got sick. There was supposed to be 400, so they picked another fellow and me out of while we were out drilling. They picked us out and sent us on the bus.
So you're going to Oklahoma and...
Put us on the bus. my name was States and he was Stevenson, so I was in charge of him because my name came first.
Right.
We happened to get into the college. It was, I guess, about 11 o'clock at night, and the commander of the squadron there at the college, Madison, took us up to the dormitory and he said, "You're on the third floor." That was it. And the lights were all out and we just had to find our way in the dark.
Right.
So, but we managed.
So you were at a teacher's college in Oklahoma? There probably weren't many other guys there, were there?
No, that was one of the good things about it. See, there's nothing but girls going there outside the 400 guys. But, and then we lived in the dormitories too, you see.
Right.
And we had English and math and physics and all stuff that college kids had.
Right.
Only we had it a lot faster.
Right. How long were you there?
Well, I came in about the first part of March and left the end of July.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Cadet Center to take your test to see what you're going to be, pilot or bombardier or navigator. Well, I was qualified. I had to go to the hospital for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And when I come back, they called me into the office and they said, well, you've been gone. They raised the standards and you don't qualify no more.
So you've taken a test and passed, and then you go to the hospital and they say, well, we sort of changed the regulation, so you've now flunked the test you passed?
My grade wasn't good enough.
Right.
But actually, what had happened was they had so many that they just had to cut. I don't know, it happened to a lot of other guys too. They had so many they just had to cut down, really.
Right.
And so then I took tests. That was at San Antonio Aviation Cadet Center, and I took tests for a flight engineer and a radio operator and armorer. Well, they said they wanted to send me to flight engineer school. That was in Mississippi, and that wasn't the best place in the world to go, and I wanted to go to armor school because that was in Denver, and I thought I might get home then. And
right.
So we settled on radio school. They said I did really good in that.
Okay.
Because...
And where was that?
That was at Scott Field in Illinois.
Okay.
Style of St. Louis.
Okay.
So from San Antonio, I went to Scott Field.
Okay.
They had a big sign over the gate. It said, "Through these gates pass the best damn radio operators in the world."
Mm-hmm.
And so I was there till May of 44.
And you were learning rate, and so you were there for?
Radio operator mechanics, you see. You took code, and then you had 3 hours of code, and you had 3 hours of mechanics. So you had to pass. So I got up so I could do 22 words a minute in code, and a word is 5 letters. So
right. Actually,
it was writing 110 letters in a minute.
And this is the tapping, the Morse code, or?
Yeah, Morse code.
Okay.
And we were writing right along. When you started out, see, it was about 4 words a minute, and then you kept gradually
right. Going
up. I had a hard time getting 12 words a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came, I don't know, just
one day you got it?
Yeah, one day I got it. Mm-hmm. In fact, I lost back a week on account I didn't get it. See, if you didn't get a certain time, then you had to stay longer until you got it.
That right. Was
2 years.
So how many months were you there?
Well, see, I started in, it was toward the end of October.
Of 1943?
Yeah. I left there in early May of 44.
Mm-hmm. Sort of from there, where did?
I went to gunnery school then. That was at Yuma, Arizona.
Okay.
And I see we learned, we shot a lot of skeet. We was practicing.
With shotguns? Or?
Yeah, with shotguns.
Okay.
And it's kind of odd that all the shotguns they had been donated from private people. It wasn't manufactured all
right,
the same kind, so mm-hmm. You could get different kinds of guns.
Mm-hmm.
And they shot 100 rounds a day.
And the purpose, I mean, I'm thinking about aerial combat here, and I guess a moving target?
Yeah, well, that was it, you see. And then we did that for a while, then we had 50 caliber machine guns, you
right. See.
And we had to learn how to take them apart and put them together again blindfolded.
The Browning's, right?
Yeah. And then they, you know, they had different malfunctions. We had to learn those. Mm-hmm. And then they had a track come up with, well, you probably don't know what a speeder is, but it's a little 4-wheel outfit running around on a track.
Sort of like a pickup truck?
Well, it had a target on it, so you knew.
I think I've seen a picture of what you're talking about.
And they, you had a turret, and you shot at it. And then we had some air, you know, tow target to shoot.
Right.
And yeah. And then they had another deal on skeet, too. It stood up in the back of a pickup and went around the track, and they throw the birds out and you. Well, it's kind of funny. They had some colored guys driving the pickup, and they'd always speed up a little just around the bend, you know, so you just about to kind of throw you off.
Uh-huh.
And it was fun.
And so you finished gunnery school?
And I got a 30-day furlough. That was the first furlough I'd had. Well, it was
late in the summer of 1944?
Well, no, it was in June.
Okay, so gunnery school took a month?
Well, it took May and June.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was late April. I don't know. It was right in there sometime.
Okay. You got a 30-day furlough? Did
yeah.
You go back to?
I went home then. And from there I went to Lincoln, Nebraska. That was where they were assembling you into air crews. And so I got my air crew there. Then we went to Mountain Home, Idaho for training.
Mm-hmm. And what air crew were you assigned to?
Oh, well, it was called Fitzgerald Crew.
Okay.
And, well, here's what happened when we were in training. We wrecked the plane.
crashed the...
Yeah, well...
Is that B-24?
Yeah, this is what a B-24 looks like. Only now, in combat, we have those stripes going up and down on our plane.
Right.
But that's what it, what kind of less looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I did the first trip for a navigator, and, well, he was supposed to be practicing line formation, and are you coming?
You're so good.
Okay. And the, first plane we had malfunctioned. I think we lost the motor, and we had to come back and get another one. And by that time, we was supposed to be flying formation, but it's long gone. So we went up and tried to find them, and on the way it started icing up, and it was really vibrating. That was one time I would have popped out of an airplane. But finally got lost. Mm-hmm. Or the navigator, I should say, and I had to get out a bearing for him, but the ground crew sent bearing the opposite direction. Instead of coming towards our home base, we was going farther away.
Right.
And finally, we started to run out of gas, and we had an engine on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And he got the fire out, and then he saw a little landing field, but it was after dark, see,
mm-hmm.
and landed, and the runway was too short, and there was a big irrigation ditch
mm-hmm.
sticking up, and so we plowed into that. Nobody got hurt, but we had to, our hatch got stuck between, so we had to come, the ones in the front had to come out the windows. The guys in the back, they could come out this over here.
Yeah, so was anyone hurt?
Nobody got hurt or nothing, except the airplane. You can see it didn't survive too good.
Looks like you had to get a new one.
Yeah, we didn't. They didn't have new ones. That's what we had. What they were flying was the old kind of war worry.
Right, the ones that weren't in good combat.
Yeah, it was kind of about half wore out.
Mm-hmm.
So then we had to start all over again. Of course, they had a big inquiry, and they had thought that I had did pretty good as a radio operator because I had got to base about 800 miles away. And
so you were 800 miles
away. And I did the right procedures, too, and everything. So
where were you when you landed?
At the Grand Oregon.
Okay, which is Mountain Homes at Boise, right?
Yeah, it's east of Boise. Yeah, we went to Boise. That was mostly where we went. There was a base in Boise, too, but we were at Mountain Home.
Right.
And we landed at Le Grand, and then they trucked us over to Pendleton, and they had an airplane come over from Mountain Home and pick mm-hmm. us up. But they had a big, everybody got
interrogated. Was this your first flight out, or...?
Oh no, this was in the middle of our training.
In the middle of your training.
Yeah, we'd had to make, see, one of the things that we had to do was fly to San Francisco. And we'd done that, but after that accident, we had to make that trip again.
It's a long trip.
And, yeah, it's kind of fun, though. You see Golden Gate Bridge and all mm-hmm. that stuff, you know. But the radio operators had a bunch of stuff they were supposed to get done while we were at that base.
Right.
So that kept you kind of busy.
Oh, that's here.
And then I guess it was in October we finished our...
October of 44?
Yeah, we finished our deal at Mountain Home, so then they shipped us to Topeka, Kansas. That was where you got your stuff to go overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were there, we got into Kansas City a few times. But you picked up your stuff that you needed for overseas mm-hmm. and got ready to go.
Do you know where you were going? Or?
Well, we figured we was going to, yeah, we pretty much knew he was going to England.
To England, Europe?
Yeah, the European theater, which was all right. I didn't particularly want to go to that South Pacific because we had bugs and everything else there. And from there, from Topeka, then they shipped us to Camp Kilmer, New Jersey. That was the jumping off place before you went overseas.
Right.
We got to go into New York City once. And that was a good experience.
Have you ever been to New York before?
No. Always. We went, a bunch of us went in and out, some of my friends and I, and anyhow, we had dinner in a pretty fancy restaurant. And we had a taxi cab, and we was going down the street, and there was a bunch of girls outside the hall wanted us to come in. They had crackers and biscuits. We was having a convention there. So we went in there, and boy, that was really a deal. We had, they had two bands, and lots of people to entertain you. And but that was the last time we got in New York.
And so did you fly over to England?
No.
Or did you?
The Halloween night, we went into the harbor, and then we loaded up about midnight, and we went on the boat called the Old France.
Okay.
It was a French boat run by the English, and it was supposed to be at that time the third largest in the world. And Queen Elizabeth and Queen Mary left at the same time.
Right.
And so we were in the first enlisted men, and we were down the bottom of the boat toward the front, so it was kind of rough. The first day was, I wasn't sick, but I was not all that enthusiastic either, but that was the only time.
But at this time, which was relatively late in the war, about 6 months left, were you still having to zigzag to avoid the...
No, you see, those boats were fast enough, they didn't need any escort, and they did zigzag. In fact, I think we had to kind of go down towards France to avoid some submarines.
Mm-hmm.
And we landed in Liverpool. It was about 2 weeks, I guess. We got it here. We departed the 1st November, and we arrived there the 12th of November. So you can see, and then it was a couple of days. We just laid in the harbor because they was unloading the Queen Mary and the Queen Elizabeth first.
Right. And those are pretty big ships, aren't they?
Yeah, they're big, bigger. They were bigger than the Ile de France. And so then we were assigned to the 389th base at Heppel.
The 389th squadron? Tried to do some.
Yeah, it was the 389th bomb group, that's what it was. And it was the 565th squadron.
And where was it?
Heffel, H-E-T-H-E-L, England.
And
that was kind of towards southern England.
Right, southeast coast, or?
Oh, it was inland for all the ways. There were bases all around, that was from the
right. Right.
And then we started flying. Our first mission was December 4th.
Okay, December 4th, thank you.
Yep, and Biebra.
Biebra, where, is that in Germany, or?
Yep. And I flew the co-pilot and navigator, and I flew with a different crew that first mission.
Right, to sort of study, or?
Yeah, I don't know, that's just the way they did it.
But they told you to do, so you did
That's what he was assigned to do, so you did it.
Mm-hmm.
And our whole crew flew I kept track of my missions.
Mm-hmm.
December 6th, that was when the whole crew flew together for the first time. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our bombing was around 22 to 24,000 feet.
22 to 24?
1,000 feet.
Yeah, and...
And it was always below zero.
Right. Before we talk a little more about the combat, can you tell me a little bit about the crew and your plane? And
well, of course, we didn't take a plane over there, but we flew most of our mission in a plane called Sleepy Time Gal.
Okay.
And, well, there was a crew, the original crew, would you want to... What do you want to know here? This was a pilot, Fitzgerald,
mm-hmm.
and he was from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And this was our co-pilot, Reese. He was from Georgia. This was a navigator, he was from Pennsylvania, Kalsasak.
Mm-hmm.
This was our bombardier. He was from New York, and he flew with another crew Christmas Day and got shot down and killed. This was our engineer. He was from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was from North Dakota. And after we got the third mission we were on, the plane right next to us got shot down, and he got, I don't know what you call it, nerves or something, the last. This fellow was a tail gunner. He was from Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
This was a waist gunner. He was from Maine.
Mm-hmm.
This is me.
Mm-hmm.
This was a nose gunner, and he was from Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Stump.
How many of you guys survived?
Well, of course he didn't. The rest of us did, but he blew her off him.
Right.
The only ones that are living yet is these two, him and me.
And do you maintain some sort of contact?
Well, for years we had reunions. I think we started in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And just our crew would have reunions about every 4 years, and then as we got older, we decided, well, maybe we better have every 2 years. So
mm-hmm.
we had them every 2 years. I think we had the last one in 98 or something like that. No, maybe it might have been 2000.
Mm-hmm.
But then they kept dying off and
mm-hmm.
getting older and crappy.
Mm-hmm.
We write all my hero from some miles. This fellow's wife just died last winter, and this fellow just died. He died last fall. His wife died this spring. So
mm-hmm.
we just these four of us left.
Was there? Sort of your plane. It was Sleepy Time.
Yeah, Sleepy Time. You heard that song. The song Sleepy Time Gal.
Sure I have.
You probably
heard it. I could come up with a song you probably never heard either.
Well, I really want to hear old songs and some of these new ones I don't.
Yeah.
Don't do much for me.
And so, and
here's what we had later on. Now this fellow was the engineer, and this guy flew with us, but mostly we flew just. See, we started with 10, but
right.
most of the time, after the bombardier got killed, we just flew with 9. The navigator, we always dropped one, but we didn't find
right.
anyhow, so,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't like everybody was trying to hit the target right in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Here, some of your combat experiences, there's really nothing like aerial combat, because unlike the guys in the infantry who are sort of around it 24 hours a day, you get up in the morning in a bed in a place in England that's relatively quiet, get up at you know, 6 hours over, 6 hours back, and then...
Then you're done for the day.
Right.
I always thought the infantry had it really tough, but I did talk to different infantry guys who had been over there, and they said, yeah, but you guys ain't got no place to hide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you go to a target and you see that flak coming up at you, you know you're going to go through it one way or the other, and you can't say, oh, it looks too tough, we'll turn around and
right.
go back. So.
Hit the target.
But yeah, it, that was one of the advantages, I think, of being mm-hmm. in the Air Corps. That you had it pretty good when you wasn't flying.
Right, and the flak was pretty heavy. Over,
yeah,
I mean, certainly
yeah.
over Berlin, but
yeah,
over
you see,
other
yeah.
locations.
That paper there, that's the Stars and Stripes that we got in the other day.
Right.
And that was the one I happened to go on. Was that one more, it was 1,200 heavy on Berlin. That was the biggest raid on Berlin at that time.
Right.
And that made you a little nervous because you knew there was going to be a lot of, they had more flat guns than anybody, and
mm-hmm.
we had kind of a bad start. We had to come back and the gas cap came loose, and we had to come back and get that and had to hurry up and catch up, but we made it all right. So it turned out all right.
I know that by November and December of 44, the situation in Germany, the Luftwaffe was scarce. But did you ever see any fighters? Any?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
But you see, the escort was. Better, you see, that was...
Mustangs were carrying all the way by then, I think.
Yeah, they could go all the way, and in fact, they had some bases in France, so they, you know, they could pick us up from there, too.
Mm-hmm.
And about, all toward the, I guess about a third of the way through, when they formed, we pulled a flare, and our crew kind of competed to do that because there were so many planes flying around, you had to have some kind of a way for your own group to know to find you.
Was your group the lead, was your plane the lead plane out there?
No. Well, it was getting toward the end of the war on one of our last missions, the group leader, he got hit by a fighter. Knocked down the leader and the deputy of the lead, and he got three planes before he shot it down.
Mm-hmm.
So we flew what they call the slot. We were kind of in the middle. It was a good place to avoid fighters, but not so good for flak because they could kind of sight on the first ones and
mm-hmm.
the next one.
Did you ever, when you were a gunner, did you ever get
it? No, that's another story. See, first they had the belly turrets,
right.
You probably seen them. But when I got over there, they had taken them out. I never did know the reason why, but they were kind of a dangerous thing.
We're talking about the ball turret?
The ball turret, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, those were dangerous.
And they had taken them out, so you see, that made, I was the gunner they didn't need. I was supposed to run the top turret here.
Right.
Engineer would have been a race gunner, and then one of the other guys would have been the ball turret. But since it wasn't any, why the engineer run the top turret? So
right.
I did the radio operator, and kind of opened the armory doors, and kind of flunkied otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, I had to keep a log, and you know, and count for the time. I take off and. Except when they're over the target, then I would do what they called off watch. And then they always have a strike message I had to listen for, and but no, I never did get to shoot at anybody. But that was the way it was. The radio operators at that time didn't mind that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I never did find